Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Thank you for downloading the Tech Central podcast. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm here today with Vox CEO Jacques De Toy. Jacques, welcome to the podcast.
Morning, Duncan. Thank you very much.
So you've recently changed the name of Vox, actually. It used to be called Vox Telecom until quite recently. It's now just Vox. Why?
I think a lot has changed over the last 3 or 4 years. Our name has changed. I'll get back to that in a second. Our brand has changed. And I think if you look at the DNA of the business, that's changed dramatically as well. But we can get back to the name Vox or Vox Telecom to Vox. Very few of our customers, as a start, refers to Vox as Vox Telecommunications. Right? So I think there was a drive from the market to say we need to be what people know us as is, and they know us as Vox, not Vox Telecom. We also are moving away from the traditional ISP or traditional voice provider. The old Orion business was a voice provider. Mm. The old DataPro was a data provider. Moving away from those two models as a fully integrated telco. So this is one of the positioning statements to say, you know, our DNA has changed. What are we now? We are now Vox.
Okay. So becoming more of an integrated ICT value player than simply an ISP,
absolutely,
is what you're saying. So a couple of weeks ago, Vox announced that its shareholders have approved a 550 million rand investment, much of it which is going to go into new fiber infrastructure. But before we get to that, and I want to talk about that in some detail later in this podcast, I want to talk a bit about the changes that you've brought to Vox since you took over as CEO back in January 2013. You took over from Doug Reed, who founded Vox, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
Is that correct? Yeah.
He founded DataPro.
Founded DataPro, okay, which eventually became Vox.
Yeah.
Yes. And, of course, Angus McRobert, who was co-CEO at the time. Now, Vox has changed quite radically as a business in those 4 and a bit years since you took over. Just take us back to what this business looked like at the beginning of January 2013 and what you've done in that period.
So if I can go back one more year to 2012.
Sure.
2012, Vox wasn't a consolidated business like we know it today. Vox at that stage consisted of multiple entities. You would recall brands like Atlantic, Orion, Telepreneur, DataPro. We had a video conferencing business, et cetera, et cetera. But there was a lot of duplicated costs. There were no synergy, and customers ended up dealing with multiple organizations. So in 2013, my first task was to finalize the consolidation. In 2012, we were around about 10 different businesses. 2013, we consolidated that down to four large entities. And the first task at hand was to make it one business. Initially, with the objective to strip out any synergies, to get people to speak from one voice, get customers to see only one face when they engage with you. And that took us about 18 months. Now, if you go back 5 years, a standalone ISP would not have survived the times. Neither would a standalone voice provider. So I think in terms of creating sustainability and longevity in the organization, you had to consolidate it. You had to go to a customer with a single offering, a converged offering. We often talk about stickiness. Stickiness is the one part, but I think from a customer perspective, he needs to feel that he's buying some value. He's buying, you're differentiating yourself in terms of your value-added services. So today it's one business, one sales team. Yes, we've divisionalized about 2.5 years ago because we became like a slow-moving giant in 2014. No, we consolidated all the teams. I think at that stage, the sales team consisted of about 120 odd people, one technical team, but we lost, call it the expertise in the different verticals. And we realized if we want to maintain our competitive edge, you've got to get the focus back. Mm. And then we broke the business up into a carrier and a connectivity business, which is your traditional ISP businesses. a consulting business, which is our Microsoft consulting arm, a communication business that deals with video conferencing, voice services, voice termination, PABXs. And that, it's amazing to see how quickly that focus brought back agility and energy into the market. So although we've still got an account management team that services customers after the sale have been concluded, you've got those sales and technical teams focusing on that market or on that product with absolute expertise. So that's where we now. I think we've changed the business completely. We run that segmented model at this point in time. In 2016, early 16, the board agreed that we must invest in infrastructure. And I think that was the last puzzle in terms of our vertical integration strategy. So you start off owning the infrastructure, be it fiber, copper, wireless, Wi-Fi, doesn't really matter. And then you build your services on top of that. And those services have got two categories, either on-site or in the cloud. Everybody talks about cloud, but not everybody is ready to move to cloud. So I think if you now take that entire product stack, infrastructure, services, cloud-based consulting, there's nothing we cannot offer a customer. I think what we're quite proud to talk about in the market is the fact that we've got a bouquet of 160 products. So there's no way that we cannot offer a customer a solution in that ICT product stack.
How difficult was it, though? You had all these multiple divisions back in 2012. I remember you were heading Vox Orion. You were based out in Sunning Hill. As far as I know, everyone's based here at this Vox campus across from Melrose Arch. How painful is it to go through that sort of restructuring as an organization, and how did you lead that change?
The biggest pain came from the diversity in cultures.
Oh, yeah.
So to put business processes together is a theoretical task. Mm. You look at what's working, what's not working, you polish the parts that's not working, and on paper it should work. People is the difficult thing. Now, what I think I did right was I didn't take over from Doug thinking I'm going to implement an Orion culture.
Right.
Or I also didn't think I'm going to continue with a DataPro culture. We were a new business, and we had to subscribe to a completely new set of values. And I think if you ask me, what did I do? I looked at what's a common value or a set of common values across all our lives in our personal capacity, and I made sure the business understand what those are, respect, quality, service delivery, those kind of things, and made sure we understand it, communicated that into the business, and said, this is the new culture. And once you sort the culture out, the rest is just theory. Okay? Mm. It's business processes, changing of names. And I guess for the first 3 to 4 months, people will still want to remind you of the past. Yes, but in Orion we did it that way, and in DataPro we did it that way. But what was amazing to see is the guys that embraced the change were the individuals that grew in the organization. They went from junior people to senior people. They excelled. They enjoyed what they were doing. And we tended to lose the people that resisted the change. I don't think today any of those guys are still around.
Mm. Now, this campus here, what is this area? Waverley?
Yes.
Waverley. This used to be, a couple of these buildings used to be Vox. Some of the other buildings used to be let out to other companies. You had Vox offices all over the place. It's all been consolidated here now. Do you own this entire campus?
We don't own the campus. Mm-hmm. When we started, DataPro had occupied the first building out of the five, the first. And then when Orion moved in from Sunning Hill, we obviously took on more of the buildings. And today we occupy all five buildings.
Right.
But we don't own it, unfortunately not. And then we've also got the service center in Centurion. There's about 186 staff there. And then we've got a small office in Fairy Glen. So the Gauteng region really consists of three offices.
Okay. And then nationally, I'm always amazed when you go to smaller towns in South Africa to see Vox Telecom has a presence there. I think you probably, I mean, maybe only MTN and Vodacom have a bigger presence in some of those remote parts of South Africa. Is that done through a dealership arrangement?
Two reasons, and it's a bit of an evolution that we went through. I think in eight years ago, we had a huge channel business, or agency, call it agency reseller channel business, over 1,200 Atlantic franchisees.
That's right, yes.
And that basically gave us the initial footprint. That's come down slightly now to about 400 outlets or resellers, I can refer to that as a reseller rather. But our national contracts within the Vox stable also forced us to service some of these smaller towns. So you've got to have an office in Potchefstroom, in Klerksdorp, in Bloemfontein, Upington, because you've got customers that's got a national footprint. And they don't necessarily want to deal with Telkom, who's got offices in all these areas. They want to deal with an alternative, but they demand those service levels.
And of course, there are businesses in those towns as well.
Absolutely. No, there's huge opportunity. Yeah. What amazes me when I go and visit those towns, how grateful the people are that someone actually comes from Johannesburg and is prepared to spend the time with them.
Yeah.
It's amazing. A meeting here can take 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. A similar meeting there takes 2.5 hours because they just suck the information out of you every time, and they're grateful of that.
Yes.
And I think a lot of the telcos are missing out on these opportunities not to spend time and invest with the local businesses. Mm. We often do road shows where we invite customers to our offices, they come and look and understand the business, the culture, engage with the people, and you'll invite them for a 45-minute interview engagement, and it ends up being a 4-hour discussion. You actually become their friends, to be honest.
So where is Vox positioned in the market today? You guys, you're big in the SME space, I know. Are you pushing into that corporate market as well? Where do you, when you go and talk to a customer, or you actually go and seek out a new customer, what is the profile of their customer, and what is it you're trying to do for them?
So you look at the split of our customer base. We've got roughly 100,000 sites, of which 45 will be SME and consumer.
Okay.
Or let's call it consumer customers. That's typically an individual that will contract with Vox in his personal capacity, ID number, not a business. It forces us to service corporate customers and consumer customers totally different. So you've got to have a section in the service center that is aligned around consumer expectations and a different section in the service center that's aligned around corporate and SME expectations. Then if you look at the SME market, that's about another also 40,000. Now, SME in our world goes up to 100 users. Okay, and that then only, now depending on who you are, 50 users might be a corporate. In our world, up to 100 is still SME. And then we've got about 15,000 sites that we classify as corporate. That will be a typical South African National Defence Force, South African Police Services, Department of Health. So it's one account, but multiple sites. If you asked me earlier on, we perceived as being a dominant player in that SME sector. I think that's something of the past. That was 2 or 3 years ago. Undoubtedly, we're starting to creep into the top-end market. We're starting to get bigger tenders than we previously used to get. I know we're taking a business away from our competitors like Internet Solutions, Vodacom Business, Telkom, or now called BCX, and we see those customers moving across. And the main reason they move across is the agility. Mm. Our product set adds value to their lives.
Okay. So the industry is changing all the time. In fact, we were chatting just before we started recording this podcast this morning about how rapidly this industry changes. Talk of consolidation, report just last week that Internet Solutions may be in talks to potentially buy Dark Fiber Africa. In fact, you guys went through a process, I think it was a year or two back now, where you basically said, hey, we're for sale, come and have a look at us. And I don't know if you ever got to the stage of a due diligence investigation, but you effectively put yourselves out on the market, and then you decided, or your shareholders decided, actually not to sell. What happened there?
I think we need to go back and understand who's our shareholders.
Sure.
Private equity. Metia, private equity fund, Rand Merchant Bank, and Investec Private Equity. Those are our three shareholders. Now, any private equity, in the world of private equity, there's a shelf life. Okay, they would acquire a business at the right price, they will build it, and they will sell it. Now, always advocate to the team, anybody would want to buy a sexy business. And I think Metia or all three shareholders got to the point where they said, this asset, they've owned an asset for X amount of time. It's time to take it to the market. And throughout the process, they realized very quickly that with one or two small tweaks, the business can be a lot more valuable than what its current status was. Those three tweaks were owning more of your own products, moving away from acting as a reseller, investing into infrastructure, and being able to show the ability to outsell the deflation. Now remember in 2008, we were staring at deflation in voice, deflation in data, net sales at some in some months were negative. So by investing into infrastructure, outselling deflation, and selling more of our own products, the business more than quadrupled in value. And I think that was a smart move at that point in time with very little effort. That's a lie. It's actually a lot of effort, but it's obvious changes in the business. We've now got a business that we believe is sustainable.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So these changes happened after this process that the shareholders went through. Okay.
Unfortunately, what happens in that 8-9 months prior to putting the business on the market, you tend to go through a bit of a lull. Mm. Now things slow down, you don't invest, you don't create new products, you don't add to the sales force, you literally don't touch anything that could potentially have a J-curve, where there's an initial loss before it starts turning profitable. In hindsight, I don't think you can avoid it. It's unfortunate that had to happen. But you know, once you're through it and you know exactly what needs to be done, it's quite clear. The road ahead is mapped out and you just need to go and execute.
Okay. So the shareholders wanted to obviously see what offers came through and what the opportunities were in the market. They had a look at them. Ultimately, it was decided that this is better to carry on with the status quo, with the changes that you've made internally, the lessons you've probably learned from that whole process. Do they continue now as happy shareholders of this business? Does Vox get put up for sale again at some point in the future? If the right offer comes along, is it for sale?
I think any business is for sale. Any business that's well run, that's profitable, and that poses phenomenal growth will be for sale. As I said in the beginning, that's the job of private equity.
Yeah.
They will build it up to a point where it becomes marketable. So yes, I do think in time it will, and I also believe it's the right thing for Vox. When we have these discussions openly with staff, mm-hmm. and for me, I say, guys, if someone had to buy Vox, it would be a player that can further grow Vox, can potentially be a player that gives us the opportunity to expand internationally. You know, we're 1,300 employees right now, and not all of us necessarily want to stay in South Africa, as an example. And if an international player had to buy you, you might find an opportunity to go to the UK, grow into Africa, grow into the States. Who knows? So I think anybody buying us at the right point will be good for the business, and at the right price will be good for the shareholders.
Okay.
So, but I think it would be unfair to say yes, it will be in a year, in 2 years, in 9 months. The timing is really irrelevant.
Mm.
Our job now is to run the business at the best of our ability.
Sure. So let's just look at the what's happening in the market more broadly. And I know we had a conversation, I think it was probably about a year ago, where we spoke about, and you predicted there's going to be massive consolidation in the telecoms industry in South Africa. Are we starting to see that happening now? And what do you think is going to drive that consolidation if it happens?
I think we've seen a whole lot of new entrants in the market. I think new entrants underestimate the amount of cash that is required to compete in this highly competitive, highly deflationary environment. If you don't have scale, your chance of survival is zero, unless you service a very, very niche market. For someone to start a business and offer services across the entire South Africa, that's difficult because you're competing with established players that's been in the market for 15 to 20 years. So that's a start. Cash flow is a start. Second thing is, if you want to enter the market, pick a niche.
Mm.
Pick a service that no one else can compete with. Right. We talk about what's currently happening in terms of consolidation. We're seeing consolidation in the ISP space, the traditional internet service provider space. And I guess if Vox didn't change like we started to change back in 2013, we would have been part of that pool of players that can't survive. The same with guys that only operate in the voice space. To just go to a customer and say, here's a voice rate. Voice rates is a commodity today.
Mm.
You can get a sub 50 cent per minute mobile rate anywhere.
Mm.
What value is being added? That's the question customers ask. So you can't play you can't play the race of retail rates anymore. It's got to be, what's my value added offering, and is it a one stop solution? Can I buy my fiber and my services and my consulting from one player? Because if something goes wrong, I only need to ask one person. And I think that's driving the consolidation. Everybody that's, call it standalone PABX vendors, standalone telephone management vendors, standalone ISP, telco providers, those are the ones that's now putting their hands up and say, guys, shouldn't we consolidate and form part of bigger daddies?
Mm. And what about at the infrastructure layer? Are we going to see more? We've seen, I mean, Econet or Liquid Telecom has just acquired Neotel, for example.
Fiber would sold to Vuma.
To Vumatel, and there's rumors of more consolidation in that fiber space. Do you see further consolidation happening at the infrastructure level? And is Vox in a position to play a role as a consolidator potentially?
We would like to position ourselves in that way. I think we, again, unfortunately, where new entrants are making the mistake, is they think the penetration in any precinct where they deploy fiber, be it fiber to the home or fiber to the business, will be quick and easy. What people tend to forget is that customers are traditionally locked into contracts, 12 or 24 months, especially business customers. So you've got to deploy the fiber, position yourselves as a formidable provider of infrastructure and services, and that customer must then wait for his existing contract to finish before he can convert over to you. We also know by now that unless you've got between a 30 and a 40% penetration, that infrastructure investment will not, a 40% uptake will not cover the cost. Let's call it 30% uptake. And unfortunately, there's some precincts where the penetration has only been 15%. I blame that in terms of bad marketing. Mm. You've got to go and tell a customer, be it a consumer or a business, that there's fiber in the ground. Then you've got to go and educate him what the benefit will be of moving from, let's say, traditional DigiNet or wireless services across to fiber. And again, then what the difference is between a LTE service and fiber. So it's not just putting fiber in the ground. It's this continuous education. And I think that's where guys are making the mistake. They put fiber in the ground. They put banners up. They wait for 2 weeks, hope the sales to come in, and they move on. Mm. You've got to spend 2 to 3 months. We're fortunate. I think our focused approach in terms of our fiber rollout is not that broad like a Telkom OpenServe would be. We don't have that many precincts. So when we roll out fiber in a precinct, the teams generally spend 4 to 5 months in that precinct working it and making sure we get uptake in excess of 50 to 60%.
Okay. Now, you bought Frogfoot Networks a couple of years ago. They were mainly a Cape Town-based fiber provider. Now, you're planning to, you are ramping up, through Frogfoot, you're ramping up your focus on both fiber to the business and fiber to the home. Now, let's talk a bit about this investment that you've announced, that you said a few weeks ago your shareholders have approved, this 550 million rand. Just give me a bit of detail about what this money actually is. Is it money that's sitting on your balance sheet currently that you've now committed to investing? Is it new equity that's being provided by the shareholders? Is it new debt that you've raised through the market? Where's this money coming from? And then, Jacques, once you've answered that, maybe provide a bit of color as to exactly how you're going to be deploying it.
Right, so your first answer is a debt, equity, free cash. It's a combination. There's no additional equity that's gone into the business. It's a combination between debt and free cash flow.
Okay.
That will be released into projects as approved by the board and the ExCo on a case-by-case basis. So we will identify a business or a consumer precinct, do a business case on it, look at what the potential precinct penetration would be, put the case forward, and if approved by all parties, the cash will be released.
Okay.
Most of the funds will be spent on fiber deployment within Frogfoot. And I think that's very important to understand the difference between Frogfoot and Vox. Yes, Frogfoot is a wholly owned subsidiary of Vox. Okay, that everybody is aware of. But Frogfoot will remain an independent open access network provider. Contrary to what MTN, Vodacom Business, what they will do, you know, they tend to go into a precinct, deploy the fiber, but only for sales of their own services, not any other service provider services. I know for a fact that Telkom Retail's deployment into gated communities, to date that's been a failure. The uptake has been below 15%. I know of two or three estates that Vodacom deployed exactly the same. So I've got no doubt that unless you're an open access provider, your money will burn.
Mm.
Right now, that's what Frogfoot and Vumatel and DFA, that's what they subscribe to, open access network. Let's get as many service providers to buy layer 2 services on that network on an equal basis. Mm. So Vox will procure services from Frogfoot at exactly the same price point that Telkom might or IS might, anybody else. So we'll initially focus on that fiber deployment. We've got more work currently than what we've got capacity. Over 10,000 business buildings that's been identified. Over 86,000 consumer or FTTH precincts where there's commitment from the residents to say, Frogfoot, please build. Mm. And it's now a matter of which gives us the best yield and where can we get the quickest way leave approval. I guess that's one of the challenges we're still battling with. There's no standard in terms of way leave approval across any municipality. Some don't require you to apply for way leave approval. They just say, give us notice. Others say, we've got a two-month way leave approval process, but sometimes it takes 6 months. So there's no standard that can be communicated back to customers. In parallel to that, we are growing the sales team. So last year, we grew the sales team from 120 individuals to 250. And that recipe allowed us to outsell the deflation. Because unfortunately, the deflation in voice and data in some months were larger than what the sales team could contribute in gross sales. So we heavily focused on online sales and then physical sales people on the ground. Okay, grew that from 120 to 250. And the board approved that by 2018 August, we can grow that team even further to 450 individuals. Wow. So those teams will then be broken up into account managers, nurturing an account once it's handed over from a salesperson. And then we will have FTTH, so we'll call it consumer salespeople, SME salespeople, and corporate sales guys. And I'm excited to say that will be the biggest sales team that any telco has got in South Africa.
And they'll be on the ground all over the country, will they?
All around the country.
Okay.
On top of that, we've still got our agents or third-party channel initiatives going. So Vox will have in excess of 1,000 people running around with order books that you can place business with. And then to complement that, we'll have the online sales strategy. And then the last component to that will be automation. You know, we're spending a lot of time analyzing the customer experience with Vox. And we know we're failing in certain consumer areas. Today, a consumer demands immediate fulfillment. He wants to go onto the internet, look at a product, tickles his fancy, he wants to place the order, and he wants it live within 20 minutes. Right. Unfortunately, we fail in some of those processes. There might not be fiber. The product might need to be configured on site. Now, we're looking at all those steps and trying to shorten the sales to delivery cycle, and I think that's a process that will really never end. Mm. You know, the demand will stay there. You've got to be better than your competitor all the time. So a lot of money and time is being invested in automation and process design.
Okay. I want to come back to fiber because that's where you're focusing a lot of your investment. As I mentioned, Frogfoot, certainly initially, its main focus was on the Cape Town area. Where are you focusing on future fiber builds? You mentioned the 10,000 business buildings that you've identified. Where are those buildings? And also in the fiber to the home market, where are you focusing on in future?
So right now, because of capacity constraints, we're focusing where we've got our bigger nodes, Joburg, Durban, Cape Town, Pretoria, Bloemfontein as well. That's the main areas. We also took a not calculated guess, but we looked at the outlying areas and picked Richards Bay. Huh? As one of those towns where very few operators are prepared to go. But yet, there's a large amount of businesses. Mm. There's definitely a requirement for fiber. We'll be going live at the end of this month with 3 of the 18 precincts. And if that proves to be successful, we will roll that out into other similar towns. I think everybody right now is chasing the main metropolitan areas. So Vox will be foolish not to focus in that same area. Because once you've got fiber into the ground, and then with a 30% penetration added to that, the chances of a competitor going in beside you is basically zero. So the aim now is to target those areas first, secure them, put your feet in the water in the outlying areas, and in wherever there's successes, we will then continue to roll out. From an FTTH perspective, pretty much the same model as follow. You know, we've got a large amount of residential estates, communities, that's approaching Vox to say, as a homeowners association, are you able to provide services? Would you like to participate in a tender? They will then invite multiple parties, and we'll put forward a technology solution, a price point, and based on their uptake, we'll decide if we build or not.
Okay. Looking at the attach rate, and it's something I've heard speaking to other fiber providers, there's a real worry that the attach rate is not as high as the industry was expecting, and the figures I'm hearing are sort of an average of around 20% for FTTH. Is that because of the cost of fiber? Is it because the industry is not doing enough to educate consumers about the benefits of fiber? How do you get that attach rate to the 30%, 40% sort of level where it becomes profitable for the guys deploying the stuff?
There's definitely a link between cost of deployment and the percentage required to make it a feasible investment. Now, I've heard stupid figures like 25,000 rand to pass a house. Now, if that's your cost, you're doing something wrong. Definitely. Then we've also experienced figures as low as 600 rand to connect in a multi-dwelling unit. So we've got 20 or 30 townhouses in a complex. That's a very inexpensive fiber build. My guess would be your average should be between 8 and 10,000 rand to pass a house or to connect a house. Anything outside that figure, there's something wrong. Either the stands are too far from each other, it might be an area with lots of rock, so it wasn't part of your initial costing, it might not include some multi-dwelling units, so we look at a mixed-use environment where there's some businesses, some multi-dwelling, and then residential. And that gives you a very nice low cost of home connected.
Mm.
Where the guys are coming short is where they build in estates where there's very few houses, it's an expensive build, and they then only get the 15% uptake.
Mm.
Then your investment is in trouble. But the way to get it up, I think, is a combination. It's price point.
Yep.
You know, cost of living is on the increase. Inflation is on the way up. The starting price points for fibers are around about the 700 rand mark. And I think that's becoming a luxury as well. There's not too many customers that can afford a 1,500 rand package.
Mm.
They're going to look at spending 700 and 600. So eventually we're going to see deflation in the fiber space as well. And that's purely because guys need to survive.
Mm. Tough economy.
It's a tough economy.
People don't have disposable income. But can the industry afford to bring those price points down? I mean, should the industry perhaps be looking at increasing its ROI expectations so that... or decreasing their ROI expectations, rather. So, say, if they're looking at 7 years now, maybe they should look at the 10-year ROI on this fiber deployment.
Yeah, I think ROI is one way to answer. The way Vox has approached it is said, we're not bringing the average revenue per user down just to get the customer on board.
Mm.
We want him to spend 12 and 1,500 rand, but we're going to give him true, true value for that 1,500 rand. And if you take, let's use a business package as an example. The customer buys, a business customer buys a fiber bundle from Vox.
Yep.
He gets a hosted PABX. He gets unlimited amount of voice minutes. He gets mobile SIMs. He gets the ISP component, the internet component, and he gets 100 meg, a fiber line starting at 50 megs going up to a terabyte. So if you had to go and unpack all of that and say, what's his on-site PABX costing him? What's his voice minutes costing him? What's all these components costing him individually? You will see that we are saving him in the region of 50%.
Hmm.
So, yes, if he looks at his Vox invoice, it might look like a lot of money, but it's actually 50% of what those other components combined would cost him.
Hmm.
And I think that's how you differentiate yourself in this market. You're saving the customer money, although you're taking a lot more of his available wallet.
Hmm. And do you think the industry is doing enough to market the advantages of fiber? Do you think the average consumer out there, you know, the average guy living in the average suburb in Joburg or Cape Town, actually really understands why, when he sees this street being trenched and fiber going in, do you think that people on average are getting excited and saying, damn, I need this?
I think the youngsters do.
Yeah.
And techno junkies do.
Yeah.
The like average us. Individual that's even used to downloading a few mails, surfing the internet, he doesn't need it. And I often get posed that comment to say, but Jock, thanks, this is great, but I don't need it. The younger generation, we see them starting off with a 50 meg link, and within a month they'll go up to 100, in some cases up to a gig instantaneously. It happens like within 4 weeks. Those are people that subscribe to cloud-based services, streaming. Those are the guys that do away with their DStv and get Netflix installed. So it depends on who your target market is. There's one area of concern, Duncan, is customers will end up installing a 100 meg link and then very quickly complaining that they're not experiencing the 100 meg service. On further investigation, we will then realize that you still got Wi-Fi access points in there that only supports 20 meg throughput. So where the industry is coming short in terms of education is, once we've installed the fiber, that's only the 50% of the education or the journey. The other 50% is making sure there's the right type of access points and enough of them. The average household that we install fiber on at has got between 9 and 11 devices connected to a Wi-Fi access point. So, and I don't think the consumers are realizing that they're just adding more and more devices, but they're not upgrading technology that's 2 or 3 years old.
Interesting. So, as the market moves to fiber, what's, in your view, is the future of copper-based access, ADSL? Where does that go? Will we still have ADSL 5 or 10 years from now?
Definitely not.
No.
So I think, we all know Telkom's doing nothing to continue with their maintenance programs on ADSL. They're replacing it with their own metro services, with fiber services, where it's being stolen. There's no replacement. Exchanges aren't being upgraded or kept up to speed. I think 5 years is a push. What we'll see in the outlying areas, there might not be immediately fiber available in your real, real rural areas, but LTE will play a significant role there. So copper days, in my mind, is gone.
Okay. Jacques, lastly, I want to ask you, you mentioned streaming as part of the fiber solution, and particularly younger consumers using things like Netflix, etc. Where do you fall in the whole content debate? Should a telco like Vox get into the media game? Should you be considering distribution of content or even the production of your own content? What's your view on that subject?
My view is that in terms of the production of your own content, personally, I think stay away. Right? You're competing in a space where you've got, unless you can disrupt that space, you'll be dead sooner than later. Should you play a role in the distribution? I definitely think so. I think any telco to, you know, I spoke about that vertical integration right in the beginning of our discussion, infrastructure, services, etc. We're going to see interesting things, big data, Internet of Things, applications, solutions, managing the data that gets produced by that, streaming of content. All of that will be delivered in one way or the other by a telco. That's the only way you can deliver true value to a customer, and that's the way you get economies of scale up. The more services you offer, the greater your chances of survivability.
Jacques de Toy is the CEO of Vox. I almost said Vox Telecom. Just Vox. It's been a fascinating discussion. Thank you for your time, Jacques.
Thanks Duncan. Really appreciate it.